We're recording.
Feeling good. We're recording. We're
Yes.
recording.
Am I a bit loud? I'm going to turn myself down to where I
No,
can
you're
hear
all
something.
right.
Is that
You're all
okay
right.
still?
Yeah.
Okay, I've
I
turned it
also
down.
got a bit. I'm gonna have a bit of lunch whilst we go through this as well, because
What you
there's
got?
I got some I got a veggie crunch roll. This is got some Japanese cuisine. It's very nice.
What's in
So,
that? You know how I
what?
feel about crunchy plants.
It's sushi rice, pickled carrot, cucumber, avocado, fried onion, spicy mayo, sushi sauce, nori seaweed.
Okay.
So,
Enjoy that, I guess.
yeah, it's nice. It's nice. I love these. And I've also got a pot of edamame.
I forget what that is.
They're like
Beans?
soybeans, basically. And they're like a lovely little. I got my little chopsticks. The lovely little as a there we go.
Looks delicious.
Love them. I usually eat them with my hands actually, but
Just take them.
these crunchy
Yeah,
plants, yeah.
drink them. Yeah.
But this is my crunchy roll, not a sponsor. So
That
that's
looks absolutely appalling.
lovely.
I have the tail end of my breakfast cheese sandwich.
I ate earlier.
Now, anything good?
Sausage and beans on toast with cheese.
Oh, also, do you like my new sweatbands?
Yeah, they're cool.
I bought them because,
You wanted it to
like,
be the 80s?
kind of, yeah. I mean, it goes with my
It
little shirt, right?
does, yeah.
It actually keeps my forearm, like your forearms get quite cold when it's windy. And you can wear gloves, of course, but if you want to have be dexterous and stuff, I find these actually keep the draft out of your arms,
Yeah,
especially
maybe
if you've got yeah.
I one winter when it was really cold, my mom and dad would say, just put on a scarf, put on a scarf. And I was like, scarf, it's just a piece of fabric around your neck. What's that gonna do? But you put on a scarf, amazing how much that warms you up.
I've got a couple of scarves back there.
Yeah, I like a scarf now. I've already told Hamish this, Chris, but this is an update for everybody involved, a hot issue, all that. I learned yesterday that completely unconnected, like with no coordination, both my sister and my niece also do not dry themselves after a shower. It must be genetic.
Yeah, you're all weird.
What about towel hair? Do they put their hair in a towel?
They just tie it up and let it dry.
No towel.
Not, as far as I know, no.
I wonder how did that conversation come about?
I was going to the toilet and my sister was coming out of the shower.
And she goes, "Oh, you don't dry yourself."
And I can't remember how it came up.
Why are you
I can't
dressed
remember
instead of
how it came up.
wrapped in a towel, moving in
Why
it?
are you naked?
Well,
Then we fucked.
I'm eating.
How is it?
This isn't the Game of Thrones podcast. Well, oh my God, it's so fucking good. Right.
Red is good.
I mean, don't judge me, but I got this from Waitrose.
Waitrose stuff, unlike Marks and Spencer's, Waitrose stuff is actually good. It's not just normal stuff in fancier packaging.
I agree. Although, actually, like I get a lot of charity shop clothes that from Marks and Spencer's, and they're good clothes. Marks and
Oh,
Spencer's.
yeah, clothes I don't know, but their food is just like about the same as a supermarket own brand, but with fancier packaging. Whereas Waitrose food is actually better food.
Well,
No.
this is from the actual sushi counter, and
There's a sushi counter.
there's a sushi counter.
Fucking
That needs
what
to
do you,
find
why did you say that with such derision?
When I'm king, that will be no. I'm just
Do
saying the
you
same
hate the
comment.
Japanese, Hamish? Do you hate the Japanese?
You're not going to draw me into this falseness because you've got a thing against the Chinese.
I
I hate Japan.
Oh, he's just said it.
Yep. No, I'll come out as a Japan hater. Just get a better country. No, it's Hamish and I were talking about this the other day. It's the there seems to be an undeserved fascination with Japan amongst, you know, particularly Americans, but also Europeans to an extent. And first off, it is no matter what people say, it is to some extent exoticizing. It's like, look at this weird. I mean, you see, like, look at this weird Japanese. Like, it's that partly. Secondly, Japan is kind of the Belgium of Asia culturally. Like, it's not that fucking interesting compared to, like, you know, Vietnam, Thailand, Laos. You know, China obviously has an amazing culture and history. Like, it's not that interesting a country. And also, it is unlike the other countries that lost World War II. It didn't really politically reconstruct after the war. It is still kind of, it's like just sort of latently fascist. I mean, which you can see it in there. I mean, it's a corporatist. It's a corporatist, which is part of, you know, a big part of.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the term regularly ultra conservative used, which does sound like a polite word for fascism, doesn't it? But
yeah, they're extreme gen anyway. But I just think it's, but mainly it's the, you know, whenever you.
Hang on a minute. I gotta go for a second.
Yep. Oh, everybody's abandoned me because of my jingoism.
No, you're not right. I was just shutting the window.
I'll wait to make my closing point. Oh, look at him. He's also well behaved when you do a podcast. Or usually. The audience doesn't get to see what a pain in the arse he is for you a lot of the time.
No, the live people get to see all that.
Yeah. I don't know how long Chris is going.
Yeah. Sorry, I would call it bed head if I'd been to bed, but I've been lying on the couch with against a cushion, and then I got up and it's like, oh. Because I was like, you know, leaning sideways. I was actually watching the episode again.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sort of.
Constant
half paid attention to it. Oh, pardon me. Well, there you go.
Given we don't know how long Chris is going to be, should we just pause till he gets back? I know it's unprecedented, but
I could just start the recording again, since we didn't really say anything about the show.
We got some golden stuff about showering and
we did, yeah, not golden shower, I have to say.
Golden, well, that was involved.
Yeah. That's on recording, yeah, what you said.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we do. It's family tradition. luckily, she enjoys that kind of humour as well, as does my niece, and yeah.
Just as well, really, or else you'd be getting
pumped. Yeah.
Yeah, so weeping somnambulist.
Which, yeah.
The name spoilers, of the episode.
Spoilers ahead. There's a character I hate in this one, and I'll be talking about that a little bit. And sleeping somnambulist kind of fits for that character as well. Weeping somnambulist.
Yeah, so weeping somnambulist, in case you don't know. I can't imagine there's people watching a show of ours that doesn't know what that means, but it's a crying sleepwalker. Yeah, well, I'll wait for Chris to come back. I was going to say something, but
all the stuff that's in my mind is Expanse related, and I obviously can't say that, so I'm just a bit, you know.
Yeah, just hanging on to it,
yeah. Actually, I'll finish my Japanese thing while he's not here. So, also, the anime aesthetic. First of all, anime's terrible. Let's get that out there. People say, like, though, there's anime for adults, you know, the sophisticated, you know, animes that, you know, you can, and I've tried them and they're just fucking cartoons. Anime aesthetic is taking over everything. And that annoys me. I don't like mono aesthetics that take over everything. And my very last point is the kind of people who are really into Japan, like Western people who are really into Japan, are always the most dull cunts.
I am very surprised you managed to keep that going. In my absence.
No, I was saving it, but we didn't know how long you'd be back. So I'm just finishing up before. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Anyway,
I need to ask, actually, do you have leg warmers as well as the wristbands?
Ooh. Sorry, do I have what?
The leg warmers as well as the wristbands.
No.
You should get some leg warmers.
Well, my legs don't get cold.
No, but they look cool.
They do.
That's a relative term. Anyway.
cool for me. You know, I have a different... Yeah. I operate at a different level of cool.
Oh, you are. You're...
Oh, no, when in the 80s, when you saw an attractive lady roller skating past you with with leg warmers on, that was part of what...
Well, and you knew she was on her period as well.
Go on.
No, roller skating.
Oh, because of the adverts. I get it.
Okay. Weeping somnambulist.
I don't know what a somnambulist is.
Oh, well, that's weird, because I was just saying, I imagine anybody that watches our podcast would know exactly what that means. Well, weeping means crying. Soma? Somnambulism is sleepwalking.
Oh, I was going to make him derive it himself. If you know,
somber.
Soma and ambulatory.
Somnambulist.
Oh, okay. The sleepwalker. The weeping sleepwalker.
Mm-hmm. Crying sleepwalker, yeah.
Chris is trying to connect it all up.
Yeah, I'm trying to connect it all up. Like, what's the name of the molecule's
ship?
Turning into?
It's the name of the ship.
Yeah. Well, it's the name of the ship, but like, is it a double? Not a double entendre. What's the term when it like means extra
double
things?
Double meaning.
Double entendre. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So.
I have to say, I have to ask. Did you guys realize it was Holden and Amos right away?
Only
when
the mask
came
off.
First time I saw it, I immediately recognised Holden's eyes. Yeah.
Well, when she pulled the mask off.
No, before that. As soon as he walks on the ship, I recognised that it was Holden's eyes.
No, I didn't recognise it.
Yeah, first time round.
And I'm not great with faces, but when the thing came
I'm
off,
Drew.
I'm Hamish.
Mm-hmm.
That way, right? Okay, I've got that written down on the list.
Drew reckons that I get you two mixed up a lot. I say your names wrong a lot, but I don't think I mix you up in context.
Because you've literally called me Drew to my face before, and it's
which one are you?
And you're like, how dare you?
You Julie?
Yeah. No, I'm Hex.
I'm Wing. Welcome to Trendy Talk.
Yep. Okay.
Top of the morning to you. Welcome to Trendy Talk.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I hope we watch this.
We try and include somebody every time, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know which ones are the various group things watch
each thing. I can't believe Drew's racist against Wing.
Yeah, I can't believe Drew said this about the Irish.
I mean, it's a bit of my accent.
Was that Drew's accent?
That was my attempt. That's what my attempt at an Irish accent.
It's a little bit Hollywood Irish. It's like Hollywood 1940s Irish.
It was a bit more West Midlands, I thought.
What all them, you?
Yeah. Lovely.
No, lovely.
Yeah, hold on.
I got a nice parcel in the post.
My dad used to tell a story because my dad restored stained glass windows for a living. He was working on a church in Birmingham, and somebody was talking, having a chat with him, and then they said to him, "Where do you come from with an accent like that?" he loved that.
Where do you come from with an accent like that?
Ooh. Ooh.
It sounds all right in my head.
Are you going to just?
That's like me when I hum a tune. Like I can hear it perfectly in my head, and then I go to hum it. It's like not even.
Well, it's like when I was talking about Intergalactic or whatever it was yesterday.
I've got a friend, and if you ask him to sing the Star Wars theme tune. It always turns into the Indiana Jones theme tune.
Very close. Mm. Star Wars, Superman, the old Superman, and Indiana Jones, that you can sort of blend them into each other.
Is it all John Williams?
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, John Williams, I think overrated Hollywood soundtrack artist.
Ah, no, see, I think John Williams is overrated, and I've ragged on him in the past, but what I think he's good at is making things fit. He's not very. He's extremely derivative as a musician, as a composer, because I mean, it's basically almost everything he does is something from the Planet Suite. But he's good at making things fit.
It's very Tchaikovsky.
Pardon? It's
very Tchaikovsky.
Oh, I don't think he's even that sophisticated.
Yeah, like it's a lot softer and basic. But like, I know what you mean.
It's very bombastic. I think it's very good film music. But
yeah,
it's not so much of music.
Of
one type.
It's making it fit, and I think he's good at.
Yeah, he's good at that, and I think he's good at that.
Good at scoring like, and orchestration.
Essentially, a Tchaikovsky military march. Essentially,
I think part of the problem with John Williams is that he's just done too many films.
Because I
really like Romain Jouardi. But he's only done a couple of TV shows.
He's good.
Most famously, Game of Thrones. I think he did another one, like, I don't know, was it Severance or something like that? I'm probably wrong on that one. It's something that I've seen recently that he's done, like Russian Doll or something like that, one of the Netflixy things. But yeah, I really like him. Like he's great thematic. You know, he does great themes and.
They haven't done Battlestar Galactica. No, that was Bear McCreary, wasn't it?
You listen to Tchaikovsky's March Slav, and it sounds like all of the John Williams stuff, like, you know, came from that.
I mean, speaking of, you know.
I mean, I've got to ask, does Venus have an asshole now?
Pardon? Yes.
What happened to Venus?
Yeah. I think, like...
Yeah, it looks like it's got a...
It looks like Eros has gone into Venus. Sorry, this is back on the Expanse.
Talking about the Expanse, yeah, strangely enough.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot we were doing that, yeah.
But, so, the big revelation in this episode was that there's life. Miller's alive.
Well, they've detected, like, compounds associated with life, yeah. So it's pretty, there's something... Probably.
I mean, that's a very rude way to refer to Miller, but I think that
Miller definitely survived. Definitely. He's sitting there with Shed's head, having a little tea party.
Yeah, with Julie Mao, you know.
Florence Farr is still in the credits. This is weird. She's still in the opening credits. It must be some sort of contractual thing that she got going on. I don't know. But I mean, trust me, she's not been seen in any of these episodes.
And on this episode, on the Arbogast, is it called?
Arbogast,
We meet Perky Tick.
Oh.
She's the one that Sleazy Science Man is flirting with under the table.
She's cute.
He's only getting sleazier, isn't he?
Right.
Let's try
and get some structure here and get this episode under and in control.
Structure?
Yeah, structure. I know. I'm what trying to...
Do you know where you are?
No. That's the problem.
Alright, so we're on...
Take us away, Chris.
Okay, so is the guy that you think is really annoying, is it the bald guy on the ship with the sleazy doctor in Perkins?
No, I like him. I like it. I like him.
Oh. Janus?
Yeah.
I hate him.
There's loads of people that are annoying me
in this episode.
I like the relationship between Janus and Sleazy Science
Man.
I don't like either of them.
But
I will say mainly for reasons that haven't come. Sleazy Science Man is going to become a bit not. I don't know how to put it. Like I warm to him in later episodes, and I enjoy the relationship between Janus and Sleazy Science Man.
I kind of don't mind it because they keep each other in check.
Yeah.
Janus is uptight military guy, and Sleazy Science Man needs a bit of a kick up the ass from time to time.
He's kind hippie-ish, of like, hippie-ish magic crystal science guy.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but because the thing is, right, I hate it when people are right by accident and they seem to think that that's some sort. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like.
Yeah.
All the people that predicted Trump would win, like, no, you just took a 50-50 fucking guess and you just look great, you know, great in hindsight, right? No, I mean, I'm just using that as an example, but like, you know,
you're
like,
personally attacked.
Trump, yeah, for anybody watching this in the future, Trump was the guy that started World War VII
and 6 and 5.
Yeah.
And 4.
No, 4 was something else.
Four was Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
Because, no, because of the whole we ripped in time, four actually happened before one. In that timeline.
Mm. Caused the fall of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Mm.
Has that happened in this timeline? Is it the Roman Empire fell?
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
Oh. No, not for us, but probably for the people watching this.
Mm.
We obviously are citizens of New Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Currently.
No, we you know, the Catholic Church.
Mm. Yeah. Pax Romanus or whatever.
Okay. So anyway. Okay, right. So if in terms of the structure, we're still on the research station with Stesia Scientist and Janus. That's not a large part of the episode, but it is kind of in some ways one of the most important parts of the episode because it gives us an update with what's on Venus, which is to confirm that it's not the end of what happened there, which I think we kind of knew.
Yeah, well,
it would be weird if it were.
Mm. So I think something's alive down there. Miller, maybe. Judy Mann, maybe.
Definitely Miller.
Mm.
Yeah, didn't you see that the planet had a hat on it?
And that was sort of the cliffhanger. My favorite character in this entire episode.
Sorry to interrupt because we're going to have to a wee bit, but Drew, we can see practically up to your ceiling, but you're way down.
Am I all right?
Well, I like to be able to see you in the show, you know. That's
how's better. That?
Thank you. Yeah, you're in the actual frame now. Okay. You're not hidden behind the.
Right, the flag, the Bobby flag.
No Bobby this episode, is there? Is there? Oh no, of course there's Bobby.
Of course there's Bobby this episode.
So they talk a little bit about what I understand to be called the is it the Great Filter Theory?
Yeah,
it's called a lot of things. Is it Fermi Paradox? Is another one?
You're talking Fermi about the Paradox Drake equation.
There's a Drake equation, which is what you put up on the thing.
Yeah, but they are talking about the Fermi Paradox.
It's the estimate of how many intelligent life there should be in the universe right now. And the Fermi Paradox is basically asking why we can't see them then. Where the fuck are they?
Mm. So, I mean, I think they do this, or Sleazy Scientist actually does this really well, quickly. Mm. Because it's one of those things that you can make a whole fucking episode about and just meander and have a wank or whatever.
He just gives two good examples, doesn't he? Like maybe something and maybe something else. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then Janus says, yeah, and maybe they just kill themselves all the time.
It's Janus that gives the two examples. Yeah, yeah.
So I like that they sort of knock that premise out really quickly.
Yeah,
I think that's a good moment of storytelling because it can get a bit, for want of a better term, too sci-fi, right?
It could get too bogged down as well, in terms of exposition and whatnot.
Because let's be honest, everyone who's watched Expanse up to this point has thought about the Fermi Paradox.
Exactly, yeah. And Sleazy Science Man's position seems to be that the proto molecule is a message. He believes that it is a message.
Well,
maybe not strongly, that's his gut feeling that it is a, you know.
Yeah, yeah, the thing I like about Sleazy Scientist is that he admits he doesn't know.
And he's happy to, go on gut, but acknowledge that it is gut.
Mm, yeah, because that's the thing. Like it's so easy for people to like just filling gaps. You know, like admitting you don't know something on a sort of a, you know, like it sort of releases you from a type of bias, doesn't it? It releases you from like a confirmation bias.
But that's what Janus accuses him of.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I think science. He's got, you know, basically says he's got his pet theories and he thinks he's like chasing them and nothing else. But I don't think that's true either.
Like our human intuition is a great, you know, it's a great gift, but it's also a danger in some circumstances. I think you can't go too far either way. You've got to.
But also, Janus gets accused of that by Avasarala. That that he just thinks that everything's a weapon.
Yes,
but his job is to put the military's position forward. He's a military science officer whose job is to put the military's view of what's happening in science to the government. So that's kind of him doing his job.
Yeah, they don't bring him on for like, you know, pretty pictures and big ideas, right? So
Like, if it did turn out to be an alien invasion and he didn't float that possibility, then he's really, you know, he's been negligent in his duty, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's defense, right? And, yeah, you know, whoever broke defense should mend defense, right?
Yes.
That's the yeah. Old monster.
Well, that happened.
Well, no, it didn't happen because we didn't vote for Monster Raven Looney Party.
No, I meant that. Oh. What, you seeing that thing at Roadload happened?
So they get like they do that thing where they film people's reaction before they actually film the thing, and then we've got Eros Impact Crater. All right, I'll pop this up as my first little image there because I think that's kind of like worthy of looking at. There we go.
Venus is anus.
That is a bum hole.
It's not a very healthy bum hole.
No, they must have had a bit of like Vindaloo the night before or something. That's a massive fucking crater.
Well, it is, yeah.
That's what she said.
I mean, that's bigger than the impact looked when it went in.
No, it looks really big. When you think about how big, you know, it's Venus is a planet. Like, that's a big...
That's a big crater. Yeah, the big explosion was big, but that's even bigger. We don't want to get into the spike debate anymore because, you know... you know the one right at the beginning where is Havelock spike?
Oh yeah, that was an important debate though, and I'm glad we had it.
As far as I can tell, at the end of the day, it was just it moved. You know, like it was just a problem.
No, let's not relitigate.
Oh,
let's get back to the controversy at present.
Venus.
So, I mean, really, all we know is I don't know. Did they actually give us any information?
Not really. No, not from the Arbogast. What is that? That must be a literary reference or something.
Sorry, what's a literary reference?
Arbogast. Arbogast.
The Arbogast, is it?
Yes, Arbogast. I don't know why I'm saying it like that, but
I mean, Gast is ghost, right? Arbogast.
Was a mathematician Louis-Francois Antoine Arbogast.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Or Todd Arbogast.
Oh, that's a different spelling, though.
No, it's not.
No H in it.
No, there's no H in the ship.
Oh, am I either. Looking at the wrong thing?
Oh, there is a H in the ship, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
But named after is what they said.
Yeah, Arbogast doesn't seem to be anything literary or anything.
No, it's two different scientists or mathematicians. So
it's just named after a scientist.
With a similar name. Okay. Yeah, ooh.
What am I thinking of? There's a British, I think, kind of fantasy thing that ends in
Gormenghast.
Gormenghast is what I'm fucking thinking of. Yeah, yeah.
Middle class nonsense.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. All right, is there any part of the on that ship plot line that we I think we nailed that one.
Yeah, all that matters is Sleepy important... Science Man is being a back channel for Elvis Arella.
That's the important part. Yeah, he's a her man.
And Perky Tech is important.
So the big part, the biggest part of this episode. All right, and then should we go to the weeping somnambulist?
Somnambulist.
I'm not going to be able to get that right. Somnambulist. Holden and Amos lift a ship. This is interesting. Like Holden seems to be a lot more he seems to be a lot more like almost morally gray at this point, right? Like he doesn't.
Yes, I mentioned that last episode. This is Holden kind of not knowing quite what he's supposed to be doing, not having a very clear enemy right now, and going a little bit dubious. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting how the lady, you know, the lady whose ship it is, speaks to them.
Yeah. You know?
Well, drum roll, that's the character I fucking hate.
The woman from the ship.
Oh,
I absolutely fucking detest her.
Oh, right.
She does. She's in a dangerous situation. It's not her fault. They're basically hijacking her ship, but they explain to her what they're doing. It's for a good reason. And then she just makes it as difficult as fucking possible at every fuck. She makes her situation worse at every single fucking
But
step.
You get the feeling that's the character, that and because her husband or partner, whoever he is,
sort of.
You can see
the character, and it's great acting because she made me fucking hate her. I hate that kind of person who can't just go, right, I'm not in control of this situation anymore. I might as well just do what I can to make it, you know, as safe as possible for everybody. The best that we can do. Instead of that, she keeps like, you know, shouting at people, and yeah, it just irritates the fucking shit out of me.
It's the
people who refuse to swallow their fucking pride.
I see. My read of that was that this just happened almost every time, and this was like she's sick of to the back teeth of it.
Yeah, but they're not Martians. And when the people come in from the dock to rob them, essentially, she thinks they're just going to take 10%, and that's the cost of doing business or whatever. Mm. But no, they come in and say we're taking your ship and all your shit. She's still pissed off with Amos and Holden. Or wanting like Amos and Holden see what's going to happen. Like they know this is a different situation. They're going to fucking kill you because they are going to kill her when they take the ship and take it off into space. They are going to kill her, but she's pissed off at everything they do at every point. When they are at that point doing the right thing, she's a fucking idiot. Certain characters just rub me up the wrong way, and she rubs me up every time I watch it. I'm seething.
I just got like, I mean, I get that it's like, it's not the easiest way to handle a situation, but at the same time, if you've been through that kind of shit, like dozens of times and you're just helping, like you're not profiting from this.
I get that. But it's like somebody, I'm inventing things in my head. I was in a bank robbery, the government are like everybody down, and then somebody gets up and said like, as the representative of all this is unfair, you are treating, then all the hostages get shot. Like it's that kind of situation. It's shut the fuck up, get through this, stay safe.
Yeah, but like I'd be fine with people robbing a bank if they would not
do you need a hand carrying any bags or anything?
can I get on in this? Where did they get the armor from? Where did Holden and Amos get this new armor?
They've
from
got, it's off the Martian off their ship. Gunship. Yeah,
okay, so that's Martian
same place armor. They've got all the weapons and stuff.
There's no badges.
You must have seen that when they open it all up. When they open the cabinets and there's like spacesuits and armor.
I think you do see them now and then when they're walking around on the.
It's when they go out the airlock. Yeah, in the airlock part. Like that bit where Holden has a standoff with Amos and everything. Yeah. You see all the equipment.
Is it the type of equipment where you can change the helmet to an open faced one? Or is it like the suits are just, they just come as a whole?
I don't know what you mean.
Are you asking whether you can like lift the visor, basically?
No. They can lift the visor. Holden lifts the visor.
It's a mask.
Oh, it's a mask.
From there to there.
They're space suits. But I imagine the reason they don't use them when they're just doing spacey stuff is because they're space suits, but they're all also like for combat, so they're probably armored and they'll probably be a bit unwieldy if you're just doing mechanical repairs and stuff. So
yeah, and also you want the visibility on the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do shit with those goggles on, really, I don't expect.
Yeah, they don't seem to have great visibility.
No. And also they're red, does that mean anything? You know, like they've got red.
It just tells us it's Mars, really.
Okay, so it's not like you can't see laser beams better or anything like that with them.
No, I think it's just that's just symbolism telling us it's Mars.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I tend to agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, Earth is obviously blue and Mars is obviously red, but it's weird that the proto molecule is blue.
Yeah, that is a bit odd. Yeah,
they could have gone with green. They could have gone with orange. They could have gone with yellow.
I mean, it is technically, Jean-Pierre Mao is an Earth person, and
yeah, I mean, you know, just
so they could have gone, yeah, purple.
Purple.
Good sci-fi color. One of my favorite colors.
But I think blue is the current color of sci-fi nonsense. Like in a Marvel film where there's some big space laser, it's always blue. Like blue does seem to be.
Mass Effect is blue.
Yeah.
Although Renegade is red, but it's usually. But there's a lot of blue. There's a lot of blue. Yeah, like the blue.
Yeah.
Okay, skipping through. Oh, and okay, so when they go over the plan, they bring Prax in, and Prax talks a little bit about, he talks with Amos, and now this is interesting, because Amos has a moment where he thinks for himself without the guidance of other people. A
couple of times in this episode.
Yeah. So, particularly with Prax, Amos doesn't even seem to know whether or not Prax is a prisoner or a guest, or he refers to him as a guide, which seems to be a stand-in for none of the above or something like that.
I think it's accurate. Holden that calls him a guide. I think Holden says we've got our own guide.
Yeah.
Amos kind of thinks of him, you know, as being of that role more. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seemed like Amos and Prax seem to have a connection there.
He's it's the kid thing with Amos. Amos is all about protecting kids and cares about, you know, the welfare of children. So that's the reason from his side. That's the reason for the bond, I think.
I can see. I'm already warming up to Prax, to be honest.
He's lovely. He's a lovely character.
And just like he comes across just very like soft and kind. And
I can't remember. There's something he does in this episode that's quite. He stands up to us because the episode that he's been in for, you could read him as a coward. I think the unkind reading was to read him as a coward. But he does in this, I can't remember what it is, but in this episode, he stands up to somebody who
I think he stands up to Holden.
He says,
don't pretend you care about my daughter.
And then he
starts talking about the protomolecule, and then we discover that that's one of the other things Amos has done for himself, has decided to tell him about the protomolecule. Yeah.
That's quite a big thing to tell, but
in a way, I mean, Eros happened, and it was, I suppose, it's more information than most people have about Eros. But
But Amos clearly trusts him, and there's that lovely bit where they're describing their plan, and Prax says the plan's always this vague, and Amos goes, "Yeah, it's about average."
and then
there's more conversation, and then he ends up with, "I hope your luck rubs off."
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, I knew a captain in the local army place.
Oh, sorry.
And he always had these two opposing catchphrases, which is, I bet you've heard them before, which is, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Mm. And no plan survives first contact with the enemy.
Yeah,
they do seem to be in contradiction with each other, yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like a little bit like, I get that from the plan. It's like, well, if you keep it vague, then you can adapt, right?
It's not much of a plan, though. It's a perfectly fine plan, but it's not a plan that you would think would have a very high chance of success.
I mean, I don't even know what they expect to deal with, really.
Well, they're going into an area that is entirely controlled by the Martian Navy, under heavy patrol, in a stolen Martian frigate.
Yep.
trying to get in and
legitimate
out
salvage.
Legitimate salvage. Yeah.
Does it have legitimate salvage? No criminals here. Legitimate salvage.
You get a special tax disc. That says legitimate salvage on it.
Yeah. Well, that could be. In hindsight, that'd be a good name for the podcast, wouldn't it? Legitimate salvage.
Oh, that's a good name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Illegitimate salvage.
Yeah, but it's legitimate.
No, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely warming up to Prax. I'm hoping he stays around for a fair bit at least.
Oh no.
Well.
See, the fact that you've obviously deliberately reacted to that. So, because obviously you'd poker face it. He's going to be a long-standing member of the crew. Or, no. I don't know.
I wouldn't give you information either way.
Yeah. I'm hoping... My guess is that he is like a new friendly character for the length of the second book. That's my guess. So wherever that's the second book ends up ending, like halfway through season three or whatever, then that's where I think he, and then he'll either move on or die. I'm hoping move on. There's usually in these complicated but often tragic stories, there's a lovable character that about halfway through the show gets an out. Like, they get a happy ending early on in the show.
They're but equally, they'll give us a sympathetic character and kill them off to give the main characters motivation.
Yeah, but he's not given the motivation. He's filling in a plot. He's filling, you know, like.
Yeah, but as they come to, you know, as they get, particularly Amos, as they come to like him more, and then, you know, he dies, and then they're all angry and like even more determined to whatever. I'm just putting it there.
I'm not quite buying it, but I but like, because in Prison Break there was that, like, there's that Mexican kid, and he was in the prison, and like halfway through he managed to like escape. You know, like, and he went home and he had a happy ending as a little bit of a mood boost, you know.
Happy ending giving you a mood boost.
It was a nice little ending, So, so that would be. I'd hope Prax is. He gets a happy ending. She's got to be alive. She's alive. Maybe she's the first proto molecule citizen.
You're talking about the kid.
The kid, yeah, May.
I like that possibility. Yep, that she's a proto molecule hybrid. Who's, you know, like,
we are enjoying your theories.
Well,
I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like, the proto molecule's like, right, I don't have to take over everything I come across. I'm a reformed proto molecule, and I will kindly join with anyone who wishes to join with me. And
I have learned kindness from this child.
Yeah, bingo. There we go. Nailed it. No more expanse needed. Lord. Goodbye. Let's go home. maybe the kindness.
So we're done with the expanse, and next week is going to be we're going to start Big Bang Theory.
Oh, good fucking God. I don't think even I could handle that level of racism.
Well, you know the Indian character in that.
Mm.
I watched a couple episodes and I was like, that is like, I've known Indian people. That is a ridiculous cartoon fucking accent. That is so fucking stupid. Why is he putting on this? He's clearly like an American, you know, an Indian who lives in America, who grew up in America. He's putting on this stupid. Then I saw an interview with him somewhere, and that's just his literal fucking accent. So, yeah.
Well, there we go.
So, anyway,
did we
manage to not give you any information there, Chris?
You managed to give me information. You managed to give me no information whatsoever. But then, so yeah, and then Holden and the is it who are the guys at the end in the Somnambulae?
What guys at the end?
Somnambulist. Sorry.
Somnambulist. S O M N.
Somnambulist.
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 There you go. Somnambulist.
Some beans.
Yeah, that's some beans. Right. Get your chopstick beans out. What guy's at the end? I don't really mean who's in the end.
So yeah, when the, like, is it people from Ganymede? The criminal guys.
They're just ruffians.
They're the gangstery end of OPA, probably. Or just Belford.
Or freelance.
Yeah.
I was going to say something, but it's next episode, so I'll shut up.
Yeah.
Because I also got, when you were saying somebody you didn't like, I was mixing that with the next episode as well.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Oh my god, is there another unlikable person?
Can I just say one word to check? Chicken? Yeah.
Chicken.
Okay. So I'm going to work this out now. The game of guess who Drew hates.
Everybody hates him.
The character we're talking about is loathsome, but written to be loathsome. Like, it's, it's just every, you got to hate him. Yeah,
you'll hate him that way.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So there may be some ambulance. So basically, the nice guy gets killed, and the annoying woman survives.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, moral of the story: Don't be nice.
Also, well, the moral of the story, yeah. Well,
I want her to be responsible for her husband's death because I kind of feel like in my gut, I feel like the stuff that she did led up to it. If she'd worked more closely with Amos and Holden, they could have had a defense plan for when these people come up and set up and prevent them from doing what they did. But like,
they even offer that before, but it doesn't have to be this way.
Like, I do understand her anger. Like, what Chris says is right. I get why she's pissed off, but she's acting against her own interests, and that's what annoys me.
Yeah, yeah.
And she does. And she calls Naomi the word we've heard before.
Well-Walla.
Oh, yeah. Can't have that. She seems to have like OPA tats on her. Yeah. Or OPA style tats, not necessarily belter tats.
Belter really. Tats, you racist prick. So we're all OPA.
Every Irish person is IRA, aren't they, Chris?
I mean, I
it does the accent like, and everything.
I suppose in some ways I do kind of think of the two as one and the same because.
So are you brothers of Glendower?
I don't know what that is.
Whiskey.
Oh right.
No. Like the Welsh IRA. Basically. The ones in the 80s who would like burn down when English people would buy big houses in North Wales, they go and like burn.
That's what they were called. Oh, okay.
They were pretty cool.
It's a whiskey. Oh, right.
Owen Glendower was obviously an ancient Welsh.
Yes. I just like that we managed to get three different things going at once there. It was like really weird.
Ow.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I mean, and then they go on to Ganymede, and then ... Right. So I don't think we get.
That's the end of that part of the story.
See, that's kind of weird.
None of it goes particularly well.
It's a lot like this point halfway through season two is a lot like the first few episodes of season one, where it's introducing new characters, new situations, new locations, and giving you just like a setup, like this is what this place is like.
And
you know, the Bobby stuff on Earth, which is obviously the meat of the episode because it's Bobby.
Mm-hmm. I've got Bobby. Yay. Bobby. What are we going to talk about Bobby now then?
I think we've covered everything that's not Bobby, because even like a lot of this is character heavy, plot light from this episode.
With the exception
of the Bobby plotline, which I love how it ends.
I do keep directing you towards this, but I do so because I think it's really interesting, is because we know that Holden is our quixotic character. He's, you know, when he knows who's good and evil, he does great. But when he's not quite sure he's good and evil, he goes a bit off the rails. And we are seeing a Holden who's kind of teetering on the edge of going off the rails. And I enjoy that. It's interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
Sort of flapping at the end of a tether.
Yeah.
The stuff with the peace conference, as it ostensibly is. Mm. Right. Actually, you know, let's go back slightly. Basically, right at the start of the episode. Weird use of flashbacks.
Flashbacks?
Yeah. When they're in the dropship coming to Earth, they have little flashbacks to the preparation for going on the dropship.
Do they?
Yes. Interspersed.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think that was a flashback. I thought...
They were standing up and walking around the dropship to be in a different position than sitting down again?
I thought that was after the dropship. I thought that was like at the Martian...
No, this is before... No. If you watch that bit, it's her... even in the conversations that he has, because he says that she left her purple heart.
Yeah.
That to me seems like they cut a scene and then... But they needed bits of that scene, so
maybe,
they just did it.
Maybe.
It's like her remembering it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, as I say, it's a strange little flashback.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
However, do you think that the twatty evil commander guy...
Pasta.
Hmm?
Pasta.
The pasta.
The pasta.
Not the food, as in a chaplain.
Oh, pastor. Right, okay.
Pastor.
Pastor. Well, he's the captain. He's the captain of Scirocco.
Yeah.
Or Scirocco. Anyway, point is, back to the point. She says, "Did you see the ocean when you were on Earth?"
Mm.
And he says, "Yeah." And what was it like? And he says, "It's dirty and it stank. It's something else they take for granted." That seemed like a lot of propaganda. Like he's never even seen the ocean to me.
Oh yeah, entirely possible. I think Well, he's also aware that because Bobby wants. She wants terraformed Mars because she wants to see ocean. She's got a bit of a thing for the ocean. She wants to see the skies and the bird, the animal. Like she looks at the bird, you know, she's never seen a fucking
bird. Yeah, the seagull
bird.
Is quite woo. Yeah.
I mean, maybe she's seen it, but you know what I mean, though. And I think that was also him just trying to piss on that and put that down, like put that out of her mind. Like, it's propaganda.
He really is a cock, that guy.
Oh, he's a wanker, yeah.
Mm. But also, I mean, you know better than I do, having watched it, is like, are Earth's oceans that dirty?
We've seen it in this episode.
We don't see it close up. Like, we don't smell it.
Well, we can't smell it, but Bobby doesn't seem to go, "Oh my God, that's terrible." You know, at the same time, and it looks, she sits by the, you know, the water's edge and it looks all right, you know?
No, you're jumping ahead.
Oh,
am I?
Yeah, she doesn't sit by the water's edge.
Fuck, I have.
Quick, get some Rohypnol for Chris.
Put a pound in the spoiler jar. I mean, I sort of assumed or lent on the fact that it was a prejudice or a bigotry or a you know, a
it's
thing.
Okay, Hamish. Don't worry about it.
We still love you. Why she doesn't take the glasses? Is that because she wants to like drink it in?
I don't know, because he does say to her in this episode. He says to her, "Oh, did you forget them as well?" And she says, "No, sir." So it's like
I think she's got, not to be, you know, racially deterministic, but she's got brown eyes. She can cope with a bit of sunlight.
Is that how it works?
Well, the blue eyes are an adaptation for low light. Yeah.
Oh,
it's a misnomer. Because I've had people say, "Oh, that's why your husky's got blue eyes, because of the brightness in the snow and everything." And it's like, no, it's just.
Well, that'd be the other way around.
I mean, yeah, exactly. That's my point. Kind of my point, but no, blue eyes is just a lack of pigment.
Yeah,
blue is what they are in the back anyway. But yeah. people with proper colours, you know. Come on, but yeah,
brown eyes are the best eyes, like just categorically, hands down.
Yeah, sorry, Chris.
I don't even know what colour eyes I have. Like blue, I think they change.
Mine are blue.
Some sort of average of all the colours, maybe. Browny green.
That'd be hazel.
Hazel, yeah. I don't know. I don't really care.
But anyway, I think that's her going, I've seen a bright fucking light before. I don't need sunglasses.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But they, I mean, one of the things that are warned about are the gravity. She's changed. She's trained in 1G, so she's used to that. The big horizon, you know, the because on Mars the horizon is much more rounded, much smaller. Which is why, interesting fact, so on there's no point on Mars where you can see all of Olympus Mons because of the curvature. There's no point where you can see like the whole thing, which is interesting. It's like going to East Anglia, like the big skies, it's disorienting. And obviously the bright light. And so for most of that, she's cool with, like, she's not as you know, she's trained for this stuff.
I like the dropship design. That's a really cool design.
It does seem to come down very fucking fast and slow down in a very short distance, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing that's more of a military thing. If you were civilian,
that's what it seems like.
But maybe not. I don't know.
Like, how does that not squish them?
Because they've just taken a whole bunch of anti-squish drugs.
Fair enough, then. Yeah, I'll accept that.
Because the thing is, of course, in this era of space travel, They're presumably going to be doing a lot of reusing of ships, because a lot of space travel now, is it like disposable stuff or stuff made for one?
Yeah, we're sort of moving towards reusable, like the space shuttle was obviously a reusable vehicle, but yeah, it's obviously then, beneficial.
Yeah, you'd imagine that on, you know, mass adoption of space travel, that like stuff like, so you'd get designs that will probably be quite new to us, and I think that that dropship just looks like like it's been used a million times.
And it looks very practical as well. Like it's not plane shaped, right? It's just a thing that goes straight up and straight down.
But
like
the Arbogast. The Arbogast has got a very utilitarian design.
Have you ever been on one of those rides where it goes up and down, like the back?
Yes, horrible. Love absolutely it. Horrible. Anything where you get that feeling of your stomach dropping out, which is the zero, you're going through zero G.
Love it.
Hate that feeling. Going over a bridge in a car, fucking hate
it. Love it. Although scary sometimes.
No, horrible.
The
pirate ship is the worst of them.
Love the pirate ship. The pirate
I hate it.
Oh, I love a good roller coaster. As long as they're safe, like I don't go on the obviously dangerous ones, like that are set up off the back of a truck or something, you know, for a carnival.
Where the bolts are wobbling. And...
yeah, no, I've
been on a couple of planes like that.
Yeah. It reminds me when they land in the dropship, it looks similar to me, like how it would be on a bounce ride. That's about what I feel the same level.
Maybe.
Which is still pretty intense. Like it's not.
It's a jolt, but it's not going to squish you.
No. But you're vertical, it's quite safe to jolt this way.
To a point. Yeah. You might be right, because to be fair, those drop rides, you do come down very fast. So yeah.
Yeah. It's cool as hell, but because apparently with a lot of car accidents it's your organs going up against your rib cage that causes the damage, but if you're going vertically then I'm presuming that you don't have the same pressure on your rib cage.
Died in our 20s, and it was a motorcycle accident, and he was riding pillion in a motorcycle, and it was his heart basically burst against the front of his on the back of his ribs. That was what happened.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, motorbikes are so dangerous. They're just like, I'm shocked that like you're straddling an engine like it's a horse. Like that's you know, I respect the environmental parts of it, but like I could like, yeah, they make up like something like 40 to 50% of road fatalities. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But there's only like 1 in 200 road users are on a motorcycle.
Although I know motorcyclists, and a lot of they will say like that's the car's fault.
Yeah, a lot.
Like
of
it's not too. Because it's because the car will hit them, or you know, blind.
Totally. Yeah, that's
which,
fair.
Yeah, may or may not be true, but nonetheless, it is fucking. Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you're dead. Whose fault it is?
Sleeping somnambulist, you know.
Yeah.
If you got a husband killed. Or lover or whatever.
Partner in crime. Oh, not crime.
Well, bit of crime.
Bit of crime?
Well, they're paying off the they were willing to pay the 10%, which is presumably illegal. Maybe not illegal on their part if they're just getting checked. Oh yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think
Back to the Martians.
One of the things that jarred me a little bit on the delegation side of things was Spy was like, "Ah ha ha! This Martian just threw up. Do you want to see?"
No, he's not though. He's kind of making fun of. He's obviously got no respect whatsoever for Ehrenreich.
Yeah,
he's going, "No, you would think this is funny, wouldn't you?" He's not laughing at it. Yeah. He thinks it's the kind of thing Ehrenreich would find funny.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about that little bit. In one of the breaks on the negotiations, Ehrenreich reports back to the Secretary General, and the Secretary General is a complete cunt about it.
Mm. He's like, milk them for everything.
So here's the thing about this, right? Mr. Man Secretary General, CEO, King of Earth. Is this part of the one of the things we get where he's being obviously naive, right? Because it's like
I wondered the same thing, whether he's actually naive or whether he's making a joke, and I come down on the side that he's naive.
No, I'm coming down on the side that he's naive. Like, he's like, ha, I can't believe we've got them. And it's like, no, the bit I was thinking of
was when they blame it on the Earther. And man goes, they must have counted themselves so lucky when they found out it was him who was responsible.
Yeah.
He believes that is what actually happened, whereas everybody else is like, you know, it's like constructed.
It's obviously a setup, perfect. And they got lucky that they had an Earth-born Martian.
I think those two things together. Yeah, he is.
He's an idiot.
He's not very smart. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, Avasarala.
Avasarala spells it out, you know.
Spells it out right at the end. She has some great moments in here.
I love the bit. They do the classic courtroom thing where it's going to be the classic courtroom thing of where are you going with this? And she goes, wherever I goddamn please.
Yes. Yeah, it's very good, though, but
it's like the level of sass is brilliant.
Love it. Yeah.
So obviously Mars are willing to pay reparations, and they seem to be, for the most part, putting up the smallest amount of resistance as you would expect, but in general basically offering to pay for anything that Earth asks for the most part.
It is an odd situation,
and it's like, why are Mars also so keen to accept guilt?
This is not me thinking about the future episodes or anything, because I'm just trying to get clarity on what happened. They say that the ground battle precipitated the space battle.
Yeah, I'm don't
sure
know whether
about
that's,
the time frame of that.
I don't know whether that's part of the lie, though. Part of the whole.
I think that's what it is.
I mean, I genuinely don't know because it does. From what we saw, it does look like. Well, it depends what you count as the battle, because there's what's understood in the meeting as the battle, which is the UN troops and the Mars troops shooting at each other. But then there's the real battle, which was the UN troops shooting at the monster, sorry, the Smurf. And then there's a battle in space. And I don't know. The battle in space definitely happened before the Martians started shooting at the Earth. But I think the Earthers were shooting at the Smurf before the battle in space, I think.
It's very confused because what the official line is and what we see as an audience seems to be confused here.
And so the big question is, why are Mars so keen to take responsibility? Why are Mars keen to pay up? Why are Mars covering this up in a way that makes them look kind of bad? Like, or foolish, or naive, or trigger happy, or something, you know, you know, Mars are taking the fall for this. I think Jules Pierre Mao, I think he's got his hand in the Mars Martian pie, and I think he's basically, something happened up there that was either to do with the proto molecule or protogen, and Mars are like, shit, if this gets out, we're fucked. Just like pay for everything, offer to pay for everything, and I hope they don't ask any questions.
Yeah. I think that's what you're supposed to read from this.
That's my current read. And then Avasarala, being the astute individual that she is,
she's like, something's not right here.
But here's the thing, like Gunny, Bobby,
she's
doing her best.
Yeah, but she keeps getting pressure from all sides.
Gets pressure from all sides. And she says one of them didn't wear a vac suit, which is like, that's like, whoops, you dropped a big fucking accident there. Like,
yeah, but remember everything she's just been through. She's been whisked away from halfway across the solar system back to Earth. She's been put into this situation. She's not been told everything. She's been told to lie. She's got no time to think about anything. And then they put her basically into an interrogation situation with different people with different agendas coming at her from all angles. And she
everything you say is obviously correct, and that's what they're setting up. But it does feel dialogue-wise, narrative-wise, a little bit forced when she just blurts that out. I think they could have done that smoother, I think.
I agree. But I think that's the sort of gist of it.
That's what's going on, for sure. Yeah.
I mean,
and also, her job is literally to obey orders and respond to questions.
And she gets conflicting
quickly.
Orders from two sides. I mean, it's not just the Earth people, it's her own side.
Yeah.
You know, one side's a diplomat trying to appease the Earth people, and the other side's her sleazy, horrible commanding officer.
Yeah.
Trying to tell her to lie, you know.
I find the dress of the Martian, Secretary General Assistant or whatever the one?
You mean the main dude in the negotiation?
The main dude in the negotiation.
Yeah.
The Aaron Wright counterpart.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit unfair. He didn't seem that bad.
No, he didn't seem that bad, but he seemed like. His dress is interesting.
Very casual. Smart casual. Lapel. Yeah.
Yeah, like it seems, even though he's wearing a jacket and a collarless shirt, which is the standard dress for business, it seems. Although he's got lapels seem a bit extra, but...
He's ex-Marine, so I think it gives a little bit of that sort of utilitarian, you know, rugged, like, can handle himself kind of vibe, not just like full-on business suit man.
That's like a softer jacket, isn't it? Looks wool or something. Looks nice.
It looks very navy, actually. It looks like a submarine commander or something.
The woman to his left, she's wearing a Mars Navy uniform, isn't she?
Yeah.
And they've got their version of Spy, who's a bit this way.
Who's their version of Spy?
A bald guy standing ominously in the background.
Okay.
It's like,
there's also a nice little bit at the beginning of that meeting where
I've enlarged Chris for the purposes of the
he does look very much like Spy, actually. There's a nice bit at the beginning of this meeting where Aaron where they say let's have a moment silence for the the fallen, and then Aaron Wright steps for a second.
Even Avisar Alla seems surprised by that. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Aaron Wright is. I think Aaron Wright's come off the back of the Jean-Pierre Mao stuff, thinking that he's trying to reassert himself in a way.
And it's
made him even more of a dick.
But then again, right, I feel like a little bit of this is narrative, right? Because usually under these circumstances, you do a minute silence, right? But they're not going to have just a minute of dead air on a TV episode, right?
Yeah.
So you do a moment silence. But, like, how long's a moment?
I think it's the kind of thing you might more do at a meeting, though. You might go, just let's have a moment silence, which wouldn't be a full minute. It'd just be like maybe
10 seconds or something.
10, 15 seconds, but he cuts it off after like...
I've never had a moment silence in my life.
I swear I've been involved in one, but I can't remember for a
minute. Silence is all the time, even in meetings, but never a moment silence. Because in a meeting, you got to give a number, like 15 second silence. Oh, that doesn't sound like... That's the thing, right? Like anything less than a minute doesn't seem like proper reverence, right? 30 second silence.
It's all...
How big's your poppy?
It's all just empty symbolism anyway. So like just acknowledge it verbally and then get on with things.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Yeah.
Because in the moment silence, what you're thinking is, you know, I could really do with a cup of tea. Did I leave the oven on? My balls are itchy. You know, it's not like you're thinking worthy things in that moment.
Oh, I do.
Do you genuinely?
I usually start counting down. I'm more concerned with the minute.
I generally do try and think of it. Usually get angry, in fact, rather than introspective.
Have a minute silent anger.
Mm. I sometimes enjoy just a bit of silence, you know, just a bit.
Well, let's have a moment's silence now.
Okay. Anyway, let's. Okay.
I was wondering which of us three was going to break it.
I knew it'd be true.
Yeah. I'd either take it to ridiculous lengths or.
What do they eat? Just food.
Oh, in the meeting.
Yeah, in the meeting. Seems all right. Seems nice.
But there's a point or something, isn't there? There's a point made about one thing. Can't remember what it was. Chris has confused me with his sushi nonsense at the start.
Oh, that was good sushi. I love sushi.
Good.
It's just food.
Have you ever had a cheeseburger?
Yes.
Okay. makes no sense to me.
I like cheeseburgers too. I order the vegan McPlant or things like that. Yeah,
I can have cheeseburger. Right, so yeah.
But there's not a ton of narrative stuff. It's a character episode.
It's a weird episode.
It's a get-to-know. Yeah. Yeah, we are building up to something, and it's another one of those we are building up to something episodes. So there's nothing we can really get, those of us who still have them, that can get our teeth into, really.
But yeah, so the revelation of the no one in the vac suit. There's someone not in a vac suit. And Avicerella works out. What does she work out?
They've got the Jean-Pierre Mao thing that they get, haven't they? Fuck me, I've done it again. It's because it's all happening in the same sets at the same.
You know, I've stopped watching ahead because I keep fucking I keep mixing up, like, because it's all so connected. Yeah, yeah.
These two episodes are very much
very.
You know, one. It could just be one big episode, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So just like a soldier on Ganymede without a suit.
Well, I do find it kind of sweet because Bobby's seen this thing up close, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
And if I were describing it, I would say a monster, but she refers to it as a man without a back suit, which I think it's almost like kind of childish. That, it's a blue man.
But then I yeah, but like, I was thinking, like, is she going to say monster? Is she going to use the word monster? Yeah. And I was expecting her to say monster, and then everyone like burst out laughing. Ah, ha, 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 ha. No such thing as monsters.
Would you laugh in Bobby's face? I don't know. Just kick your arse.
Aaron Wright would.
She'd kick his arse. Definitely.
I don't know. Like, maybe she felt like if she was going to use. Or explain more what she felt she saw, she'd just lose all credibility.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that. I think that's the four things that are. There's four pressure points to her. One is that the pressure of what she actually saw and what's going on inside her own head and her own recollections. And then there's the twatty boss guy from her ship, the pastor man. Then there's the Martian delegation, you know, and then there's the Earth delegation. So that's like, it's a real, it's like she's in a little box almost, being squashed in different directions. You know?
And I do love, again, we see, you know, just Avicerella is very smart and has very good instincts. Like she just sort of smells that there's something off.
Yeah, she knows where to, you know, where to get the.
I think she reads people very well. She gets what Bobby is very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, and she knows that Bobby's the point to at which to keep trying, keep poking and prodding.
She's very good at putting pressure on foreigners.
Mm.
Well, they're all foreigners of course. Yeah,
I do feel like her and Dawes are the same kind, same person in different situations. Really different, which is what you kind of said, Chris. I hadn't really thought of those two in as being. They're both very, very astute, very politically astute, very able to read people and willing to manipulate. But one seems worse than the other. For sure.
Yeah. Although
different situations.
Although we've not seen Dawes torture anyone, have we?
Well, he's thrown Miller in an airlock.
Yeah,
that's a murder. That's a bit different.
Well, beating the shit out of him when he wants information, like keep prodding him with the. I mean, it's a different kind of torture, but it's torture.
Yeah, he does physically assault Miller.
The electric prod thing, that is torture.
Yeah, physically assaults Miller, so yeah.
Okay, yeah, maybe there's more to him, yeah. Well, so where does Fred Johnson come into all of this then? Is he as bad as Dawes and Avicerella?
I think he would be unwilling to be that mercenary or that manipulative, I think.
But he did throw someone out of an airlock. But that's
you're obsessed with that. He throws one person up an airlock, and you just go on.
But there's also that bit when they're going to. I can't remember which operation they're on, but they go. I think it's the when they're going to get the scientists, and he's like, that was the old trick, making them think it was their idea. Mm. He is concerned. He does not want to manipulate people. He actively doesn't want that. I think.
But he realizes it happens.
Yeah, but
sort of like gets out manipulated. So he's I mean, I think the airlock thing is why hold a meeting by an airlock if you don't intend to throw someone out of it.
I think it's probably fair to say that Fred
I'm not saying it's not justified.
The airlock thing aside, I don't think Fred understands the value of like the Dawes goes and talks to Diogo. Mm. He understands that Diogo, you know, like his value. You know, he's using him, but he also sees him as a valuable person. But he charms him. You know, he talks to him as a person. You know, it's still in that political kind of mode of.
It's also kind of a grown up talking to a kid sort of thing as well.
Yeah, that particular. I don't think like we never see Fred talking to Diogo. Like Fred just talks to his subordinates, who then do that stuff.
But he refers to Diogo by name.
Yeah, but he doesn't seem to maintain those close personal relationships with people not directly under his thingy, which I think is part of how you have to, you know, the OPA and Belt is, it's part of how they operate and part of how he does. Like, again, he's military, he's hierarchical.
Dawes will be right down on the coal face, as well.
Even in the episode before last, Dawes was talking to everyone, right?
Diogo. That's what I mean. Maintaining,
He was talking to Fred. He was in the pit Naomi. With everyone. He makes it his business to get out and about, and that's. You know, you can't fault him for that.
And even in that public meeting, like, you get, like, Dawes, it's a bit Farage, actually. Dawes has that thing.
I didn't want to say that, invoke that name, but I thought, yeah.
He's got that way of, when he's saying stuff, it's like he's representing the will of the people there. Mm. Whereas when Fred is talking, it's like he is telling them what they need to do. He's trying to impose an idea on them, whereas Dawes seems like the representative of the public will, which is trickery and political cleverness, but it's a skill. It's a necessary skill, I think.
Yeah, I see the man of the people shtick is always something that is always rubbed me up the wrong way.
Well, I should do, because it's almost always a lie.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know,
it's sometimes not, like again, Dennis Skinner. And I think Dawes, he genuinely did come up from he came up from the bottom and worked his way up, kind of thing. He is genuinely
I said that he gets right down to the coalface, but I don't think he does get all the way to the coalface. I think he stands at the edge of the mine a lot more than he goes to the coalface, but he gives the impression that he's wandered around the coalface.
He used to work. He used to do that work, though.
No, I didn't mean literally. I meant in King.
Yeah.
I meant that he doesn't go on operations. He doesn't do stuff. He's still.
That's true, which
still
Fred
lets
does.
Other people do things. Oh,
yeah.
So there is a difference in that respect. Fred will get his hands dirty.
He has military training. Dawes might just recognize I'm not suited. That's not my.
I don't know. I think, you know, I mean, if you look at how what happened with Julie and what happened with the raid on the station, and things like that.
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah.
There might be a bit of.
Yeah. No, actually, yeah. No, you fucking nailed it, Hamish. It's because the thing is, what happened with Julie would not have happened under Fred Johnson.
No.
I'm not 100% convinced of that, but I know what you mean. I do know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah,
like Julie was left to die on her own, basically. Mm. And I think I don't.
Fred would have gone out of his way to rescue her. I think.
Yeah, I think that with Fred, it's like you're either alive or you're dead, right? Like, in terms of like, if you're dead, you know, he'll kill someone rather than torture them. Does that make sense? Like, it's like he's not precious about human life. Because, like, again, he throws a guy out the airlock, rightfully so, but it's a bit like, you know, show of strength, self-defense, keep in order, and keep in order is a earthen military kind of thing that, you know, might not necessarily have gone down too well with the OPA. That decision to throw the guy out the airlock might not have been the right
one. No, I think that works well with the OPA. I mean, he couldn't have done that in the military.
No.
You know, that is an OPA thing, not a military thing. But I think you're right. Yeah, I think that's a fair point you're making.
Or, I mean, it could have been, it can be right and wrong or smart and unwise in the same breath, right? It could have at the same time demonstrated his strength in the moment, but also being like, you don't listen to me, you get thrown out of the airlock.
You are very stuck on the airlock thing.
I think it's a poetic moment. Like, it's like... it's a little microcosm of Fred's power, I think.
Can I stop you again? There's another word that you've said a few times now, and I've given you the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
Microcosm.
Microcosm.
Or cosm.
Or cosm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'm glad we got that sorted. That's the important
thing. What's the or cosm bit about?
Orgasm.
Michael. That's what I thought you were saying. Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing there. I was just. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm giving Drew a stare, sorry.
I know, I saw. He enjoyed it.
Sorry, Chris, I didn't mean to derail you, but you've said microcosm so many times.
It's a word. You could just say it. It's fine. You know what I mean.
No, but
hey, you don't have to be stuck in the boat. You're not a teacher, Hamish.
Oh. But I feel like it's more like I'm letting you be foolish than
Well, I mean, microcosm. Okay, right.
Yeah.
So if we covered everything.
I don't know, I think we have more or less, yeah, because it is, yeah. as you both said, it's not a big episode in terms of action. It's more of a character episode, yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't have a ton of notes for this one, and we have covered them all. One of them was just like Bobby on Earth with a lot of exclamation marks.
I think I warm up to Bobby a little bit in this episode. I think it's because she's a bit more like introspective and sort of like questioning as well, you know.
Previously when we've seen her, she's been very sure of herself and her role and what she needs to do and who's good and who's bad.
And now that's
all been thrown into question, and that's making her think about everything, and that's important for Bobby. I just said what you said in more words, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was it was kind of a microcosm of that whole argument.
Microchasm.
Microchasm. Oh, sorry, I get it right, yeah.
Like a little chasm.
It's accent.
It's like a chasm within a chasm.
How big's a hole? You know, how big's two holes? You know, what? I don't know what I'm talking about now.
How many holes does a straw have?
Three.
Which can you identify them?
The one at the top, one at the bottom, and the one going down the middle. Go maximalist.
Okay.
Two is the only unacceptable answer. It's either one or three. As ever, trivial, like, question that doesn't matter. Yeah, I can't help feeling strongly about it. I feel strongly.
I'm waiting for Chris to say something, and he's just like,
I don't have an answer to that question, but it's not three.
Well, it's one.
One's acceptable. Two's not.
Zero is acceptable.
Are you just seeing it as a surface? A hole is just a human construction. It is just a surface.
A hole, like this little edamame pot, does it have a hole in it? No.
Well, you know, as Lao Tzu said, the useful part of a cup is the part that doesn't exist.
Taking a turn, this episode. First, the teacher gets in trouble for correcting the pupil, then we get into philosophy and...
Yeah.
I like that though. The useful part of a cup is the hole, the bit that doesn't exist.
So, what's the best part of a donut then?
I strong feelings. Ring donuts, good.
Donuts.
Jam donuts,
no donuts. Fuck. They're not donuts.
I don't care what they are. They can fuck off. I expected Hamish to be on the other side of this one. Actually.
No. I don't like cooked fruit.
I like jam donuts. I like ring donuts. I like custard cream donuts.
I do like a custard cream donut.
I don't mind them, but they're not donuts anymore. I don't like cooked fruit, so that's the, you know.
Well, what's the difference between a chocolate eclair, the confection, not the sweet, and a profiterole? It's just a lot. It's just a
longer,
a stumpy. It's just longer. Yeah. Why call it a different?
I mean, I've never understood why a yum yum like so that like.
Wait a minute, a chocolate eclair is cut open, whereas the profiteroles filled and sealed.
That's true. That is true. But it's the exact same thing
otherwise, yeah.
And it tastes exactly the
yeah,
same.
Yeah, yum. What were you saying about yum yums? Because I like a yum yum.
I've seen.
It's like a twisted pastry with glazed
Sugar on it. Yeah, like, it's like, it's just the name. Like, they're fine. I like them. But it's like,
a stupid name.
It's a stupid name. Yeah. It's a yum yum.
I was like talking with my sister earlier that something makes me both uncomfortable and irritated when adults use baby talk.
Mm.
For example, like tummy. Like, I've, you know, I've got...
you mentioned that the other day, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I thought of others that I can't remember.
Tummy's fine.
No, it's baby. It's literally, but it's like poo as well. Poo. That's baby talk. That's onomatopoeic. No. Oh, poo. That's poo. Tummy. It's stomach, not fucking tummy. It's
no. A stomach is a part of your body.
No,
it is Frankenstein's stomach.
Tummy is tummy is short for stomach. It's a contraction of. It's a baby talk contraction of stomach.
Tummy. I've got a tummy.
No, you don't. You're an adult. You have a belly and a stomach.
A tummy and a belly are the same thing.
No, well, they can be, but belly can mean like the external
stomach is part. Internal. Yeah. Stomach is
you have a stomach ache, you don't have a tummy ache. You don't have a fucking boo boo, and it's not a doggo, it's not a burb, it's not a snack, and you're not angry.
So,
angry.
Tummy is fine.
Well,
if you've got a bit of a tummy on him.
Oh, no, belly.
Tum-tum, that's baby talk.
Tummy is too. Like, that's more baby talk.
Oh my goodness, this is...
Tum-tum, tummy.
Unexpected points of friction.
And this is another one where my sister very strongly agreed with me and I wasn't expecting it.
Tummy. It's just like, you got a bit of a tummy on you.
You're not going, if you're an adult and you're going for a wee, you need to come back in a fucking nappy. Or a poo, or a poop, or if you say spoopy.
No, those two are not the same, right? Like,
no, I know they're not, but it's all the same problem.
So to you, it's a shit. It,
like, because corporations want to infantilize us. They want to make us feel like children who are dependent on them as like blah 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 blah. It's part of that.
No, it's not.
We're fucking adults. Have some fucking dignity. Have some self-respect and dignity. I mean, this is me. Look at me. And I'm saying we should have dignity. If I'm saying we should have fucking more dignity, there's a problem, right?
It's just like poo and wee are fine, normal words.
No.
Polite, you know.
It's not polite to talk like a fucking baby.
But it's not. Like, what is it? Like, you? I mean, I know you say piss and shit, but that's just like, that's. I mean, I wouldn't
You can just say,
I
need to go to the toilet.
Yes, yes.
That's fine.
But what if you need, what, like, specifics?
I'm going to defecate.
No! What?
That's or urinate.
Micturate.
No!
Walk like a fucking grown-up.
No, urinate, I mean, it's fine, but it's like, it's quite a medical term.
Not medical, it's just the
urinate.
Word.
Urinate. That's what a correct
non-baby talk word. You don't, do you call a cow a moo-moo?
No.
I thought he was going to say yes there. Just
it's the same goddamn thing.
No, it's not the same goddamn thing.
I'm hungry. I'm going to Tesco's. I'm going to buy some moo moo.
Not what said no one
and
ever.
That'll be delicious in my tummy.
Yummy in my tummy. Nice.
No. I'm drawing a line.
Here so what no happens? So, but like, okay, my cat is pissed on the lawn, right?
Mm-hmm.
My cat is like, okay. Like okay,
I mean, if you want to be euphemistic, if you're in bourgeois company, you can say made water.
No, that's made water.
Relieved himself or herself.
Relieved themselves is fine, but like, but then what kind of relieving? Do you need a scoop or do you just need to wash it away? Just need a
scoop.
It's urine.
Okay, because if it's defecated material, as feces, you would probably
feces.
Feces.
We have a word. Solid. Have a word for that.
Solid waste.
Solid waste. Yeah.
Stool. He's made stool.
In the comments, tell me how much you disagree with me.
It's
stop doing what corporations want us to do and fucking infantilizing ourselves and buying toys and talking and baby talk. Like, be a fucking adult. Read a book.
Yeah, sure, but like.
I
but
like the
poo and wee are in books. You come on.
Bad books. Dostoevsky never said poo.
Is intellectual snobbery now, I think.
No, Dostoevsky was a man of the people.
That's all. Fine, I got no comeback to that, yeah. Okay. On that note, should we wrap it up?
Yep, I think we're done.
Okay, well, yeah, I wasn't sure where we were going to go, but we've gone there.
Do you think a man in a vac suit ever goes for a defecation? A man without a vac suit?
No. But that's knowledge from future episodes.